if we can introduce people to God's love through health and wellness, then yeah, awesome.
I'm speaking today with Pastor Daniel McClure. He is going to be sharing today about superhuman strength. And so, Daniel, I really appreciate you taking time to share with us today. And I'd like to just give our viewers an opportunity to sort of get a general overview of who you are, your history, you know, from early childhood on up to present day, if you would.
Yeah. Sure. Well, let me start present day and I'll work backwards. Present day, I am married to my beautiful wife, Annette, 18 years. We have a 13-year-old daughter, Sierra, which you met at the beginning of this talk. And I have an 11-year-old son, Caden. And we live in Sunnyvale, California, which is, you know, it's kind of the South Bay of the Bay Area. The headquarters of Silicon Valley. And I'm born and raised here. So I was born in Redwood City, just 30 miles north up the road. Had an amazing childhood, great parents, two brothers, two sisters, raised Catholic, and didn't really have a relationship with God. Even though I went to church on a regular basis and did those things, didn't really have much of a relationship. Had a pretty decent childhood, fell in love with health and fitness, probably in high school, you know, when I picked up, I think it was a Muscle and Fitness magazine, and I saw these, you know, buffed bodybuilders. And I'm like, you know, here I was a skinny, tall string bean kid. And I'm like, I wonder if, you know, I could look like that one day. Right. So, started studying, fitness. PE was my favorite subject because, you know, we got to run and play and, you know, I got good grades in PE because I liked, you know, I liked athletics. So when I went into college, I actually walked onto the campus of San Jose State and I didn't know what I wanted to major in. So I decided just to walk the campus. So I walked into the psychology department. It was very kind of dark and gloomy. And I'm like, oh, this seems kind of depressing. I don't know if I want to major in psychology. I walked into the engineering department and it was very cold and stale. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if this is for me. Then I walked into the physical education department. And I saw all these people like playing volleyball and laughing and like, you know, having a blast. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna major in physical education. So I did that. I got my degree in physical education with a minor in nutrition for sport performance. And I loved the degree. I loved the major. And that's when I actually learned how to study. And I studied hard and, you know, made really good grades. I was still partying too hard. That was still part of my life. I got through my undergraduate with a degree in a bachelor's degree in kinesiology. And I got my first job at a YMCA. And it was kind of by fluke. My little brother was working the front desk at the YMCA and he called me and he said, "Hey, Dan, there's people here. They're hiring, you know, fitness instructors, and you're a fitness guy. Would you be interested?" So I said, "Sure." So I showed up, and I my brother was at the desk. I go, "Who do I talk to?" And he's like, "Well, go back there." So he points to the back, down the hall at the end of the gym, and I see two women, and they have blood pressure cuffs, and they're taking blood pressures of older adults. So as I walk to the back of the gym, I introduced myself and I said, "Hey, I'm Dan." In fact, I hadn't even graduated yet. I was still, I think I was a junior in college. And I said, I'm studying fitness and physical education. I hear you're hiring fitness instructors." And they were like, "Yeah, great. Can you start today?" I'm like, "Okay, sure." So they show me the room and it's a group of older adults in a phase 2 and phase 3 cardiac rehabilitation program. And they say, "We want you to lead exercise classes for these folks." And I'm like, "Okay, well, I don't know anything about cardiac rehab. I've never taught an exercise class before, and they throw me right into the fire.
And so you were thinking, wow, I was hoping for a little younger population.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I say, all right, everybody, you know, grab some dumbbells. And I start walking around the gym and just doing some light dumbbell work as they're following me, kind of marching around the gym. And within about 10 minutes, one of the participants drops to the floor and passes out.
Oh, wow. Like all the doctors.
Yeah. I'm like, first day on my job, and I think I just killed somebody. So the nurses run over with their crash cart. They raise up his feet. He pops right out of it because his blood pressure just dropped. Like, apparently they're used to this kind of thing. His blood pressure went vasovagal, which means that his blood pressure just dropped to the ground. And he stood up and was feeling fine. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. And from that point on, I continued to teach that class for another 10 years. And I fell in love with, one, I fell in love with older adults. And I also fell in love with the impact that physical activity can have on chronic disease, such as heart disease. So then I continued. In fact, that class inspired me to continue my education. I got my master's degree in kinesiology with an emphasis in gerontology, which is the study of aging. So,
let me ask you a quick question as you're sharing this, and I'm thinking, so this was sort of like your crash introduction, and you're telling me you fell in love with this. I'm curious, in hindsight now, do you feel like God was already guiding you along? I mean, this was such an interesting way to get started.
Yeah, great question. Now, of course, I didn't know the Lord yet. I mean, again, I told you I was raised Catholic, but I did not have a personal relationship with God. And as I reflect back, to answer your question, absolutely, God was guiding me. He was absolutely guiding me, and he was using physical fitness and my career as a way to draw me closer to him. I get my master's degree, and I decide, you know, I'm kind of like this entrepreneur. So I'm like, well, what if I started a fitness business focused on the baby boomers and older adults? So I started a company called Forever Young Fitness Concepts, and we started implementing fitness programs up and down the Silicon Valley, up and down the peninsula, you know, all around kind of the Bay Area. And we just started leading group exercise programs. And we were doing like step aerobics and, weightlifting and small group personal training and yoga and a whole bunch of stuff. And it was a blast. So I did that for a couple of years. And then from there, I wanted to explore more into the fitness industry. So I decided to kind of close up that shop and get into the management side of fitness. So I didn't have a lot of management experience.
Tell me a little bit about how you weren't prepared and how you were prepared, both, but the whole transition, what you hadn't anticipated and what you pleasantly discovered. I'm sort of curious if we can give graduates insight into how that transition evolves.
Yeah, you know, when I graduated, however long it's been now, 25 years ago, whatever it's been, 26 years, there weren't a lot of people in the fitness space as it relates to the older population. Like it was really, really brand new. Like I would say that I was probably like, I kind of created my own degree, you know? And so I was entering into a space that didn't have a lot of legs to it, you know? And now I think the industry is caught up because the whole population has aged so much. Obviously all the baby boomers are now in their 60s and 70s, and the industry has adjusted, right? So now you see programmatically, you know, fitness programs from early childhood to extreme old age, but that just didn't exist, you know, 25 years ago. So it was exciting to be kind of on the forefront of the industry in that space. You know, and you know, when I was 25, 26 years old, I was giving, you know, keynote addresses at fitness conferences on the aging population, and I was 25, 26, right? So that just goes to show you that there wasn't the space. now that I'm 51, I can go back and, you know, give a talk on aging population. And they're like, well, yeah, you know, now you kind of are of the age where you might have some authority. Back then, I didn't really have an authority, but I did have the head knowledge. I just didn't have the experience. And so, yeah, God was, you know, working on me there too, and you know, creating those doors to walk through. So I give glory to him for that. So I wanted to get into the management side of fitness because I was lacking that experience. So I kind of talked myself into a general manager position at a small health club, you know, back when there were many more independent health clubs. Those have kind of disappeared, unfortunately. You know, now the health clubs are kind of franchised and much larger, but it was a mom and pop, you know, kind of an old racquetball club, you know, back in the day, and they were transitioning from racket sports into fitness. And so I did that for a little bit. That was during the dot-com boom, when the industry was kind of, when the economy was booming. And then all of a sudden there was a dot-com bust. So I was a general manager of a health club during a real high, and then the economy dropped out. So having that experience of managing a club in an economy of high and low was, I think, really good for me. And again, you know, ordained by the Lord to put me in a place that gave me that experience. So I got that experience, and that health club actually ended up shutting down because we sold the space to a dot-com that was on this trajectory of growth, and they needed the space. There wasn't a lot of space for companies back then. So they actually bought the 15,000 square foot health club from us just for the space alone. So we shut down that health club, and then I got another job working for Western Athletic Clubs, it's now Bay Clubs. And it's, you know, it's kind of like a five-star resort health club. You know, it serves the wealthy. And so this was 1999, and I get a job as the director of fitness operations there. And I felt very, at the time, I use this word now freely, but I was blessed to get this job because it was, you know, it was well paid. I knew that it was a stepping stone for my career. I had in my mind, again, this is before I knew the Lord, I wanted to be super filthy rich in the fitness industry. I wanted my name, Dan McClure, on the outside of a health club, you know? And I wanted to be known. So I knew that this was going to be a great place because I was going to be in front of a bunch of wealthy people, you know, as a director of fitness operations of a five-star resort.
My guest, Dan McClure, had found the strength to build success, wealth, and influence that was impressive in the eyes of others. Yet, he was about to fully realize just how weak he was. In this next segment of my conversation with him, he shares about the incredible transformation that God brought about in his life and how that took him into new opportunities.
I'm a mess personally, because even though I was having success on the outside, on the inside, I was completely broken. I was still drinking too much. I was addicted to pornography. You know, I was a broken vessel, and yet I was having all this success on the outside. So it was like this Jekyll Hyde. I had all this success, but there was this dark part of me too, really struggling. And I'm now going through a divorce. So I'm at this health club, and there's this employee there who saw me struggling. I had left my wife. And this employee who worked for me, she invited me to her church. This was right before the September 11th, 2001. So I go to this church and I walk in, and I just feel God just greet me, like in a way that I've never experienced in my life. And I'm like, who is this? So here I am, just getting kind of wrecked for the first time by God. And I go to this church service, and I'm like, and I leave, and I'm like, what just happened? I'm also living back home with my parents, by the way. I'm not sure if I mentioned that, but because I had left my wife, my parents allowed me to stay in the room that I grew up in Redwood City. So let me fast forward. That was August. It's now December of that same year, December, and it's Christmas morning at 2 a.m. And I'm laying in my bed weeping because I'm realizing that my world has crumbled. Even though I still have this great job, like I've lost my wife. I've got this addiction. I'm staring at the ceiling. It's 2 a.m. and I hear the audible voice of God say, "Come to me." So I get up out of my bed and I walk uphill. My parents lived a quarter mile from this 100-foot gigantic white cross. And that used to be a place where I'd go with my friends in high school and drink. We'd go to the cross and it'd be this beautiful view and we'd drink alcohol. So here I am at the foot of this cross, face down in the dirt, weeping. And I look out and it's crystal clear out. Remember, this is Christmas morning. Now it's about 3 a.m. and it's crystal clear out. I can see from San Francisco to Oakland across the whole Bay Area. And all of a sudden above me, I feel this sprinkling on the back of my neck. And I look up and it's one cloud raining down on me, sprinkling down on me. And I felt the love of God crying with me in that moment, thanking me for obeying his call to come to him.
Yeah.
So here I am, a broken 31-year-old male crying out, thanking God for the first time in my life because he was there thanking me. Like, who is this God? A God who thanks me for showing up when he calls. So from that moment on, I decided that I was going to show up every time he called me. You know, just recently I've been having conversations with folks that don't necessarily know the Lord. And my encouragement to them is listen to the prompting in your heart, because it may not be your own voice. It might be his. And if you pay attention to that and you listen to those prompts, God has been directing you your entire life. You know, Brad, you asked me a question earlier on about, hey, like, did that experience, do you think that was God? I'm like, yeah, God has been whispering to me since I was a little kid. And now I can go back and recognize it because I know God now. And now I can go back to those intimate, tender moments when I was a young kid, when I was being abused. And I can go back and say, God was with me. And I know it now because I know him now.
It struck me that at some point in your fitness career, everybody saw a Daniel that was successful, that was advancing quite quickly, going from one position to the next, building that success. And, you know, if they were to look at you, they'd go, this guy needs nothing. He's really doing well. And yet you knew deep inside of you that things weren't right. And I'd like for you to share with our viewers, whether they're professionals or just the everyday gym goer, why it's important to pay attention to God's leading as we're around people, in terms of even the best of people look good, but they've got stuff going on in their life.
Yeah, you have to recognize daily that you're still broken and that you need him all of the time. But those that don't have that personal relationship with God, it is also important for those folks to recognize that God is still part of their life, right? And if they can tap into those broken parts of who they are and hand that over to God, saying, listen, God, I know that this isn't part of who you want me to be. And I can't necessarily do this on my own strength. I need your strength to help me battle my demons, help me battle the things that I struggle with, help me battle my fears, my insecurities, these kinds of things, right? We have to ask God for help in those areas, because he wants to help. He's waiting for us to kind of raise our hand and say, Lord, I need you, right? So if we can humble ourselves, even as great as we look on the outside, you know, you might be a fitness professional and you might have that six-pack abs and you might have 100,000 people following you on Instagram. And, you know, you might be on this trajectory of awesomeness from a world perspective, but you know, you might be listening to this right now thinking, oh, hold on a second, you know, Pastor Dan is speaking a little bit of truth to me, because I know that even on the outside, everybody is looking at me as like this superhuman, that I know that I know what I know, and I know that I'm broken and I'm dealing with whatever it might be, depression, you know, so many things. But so can I hand these things that are out of my control over to a God that can help me navigate these tough places? And I say yes to that. And God wants you to say yes to him and yes to submitting, for lack of a better word, right? That's a scary word to use, to say, you know what, Lord, I don't have it all together. So I'm going to hand it to you, because you can help me through these places where I'm broken.
There's a tendency to think that we can just create our own success, that if we work hard enough, we can become stronger. You know, all the trappings that go along with a positive lifestyle, a healthy lifestyle. At some point in your journey from transitioning from fitness into your position as a pastor, you started to see that, hey, wait a minute, this fitness has its limits. There's some things that it can't accomplish. Yeah. And I'd like for you to just sort of share with the viewer how you started to experience that and what you maybe wrestled with as you were starting to consider a shift in careers.
Yeah. So I have that amazing cross experience, right? I start reading the Bible and I start discovering really who God wants me to be, as opposed to who I wanted to be. And there's a difference there, because who I wanted to be was, like I mentioned earlier, I wanted, you know, the notoriety and the fame and the glory. But who God wanted me to be was humble. And God wanted me to maybe take everything that he had given me as a gift. He wanted me to then use those gifts, not for my purposes, but maybe for his. So I leave that cross experience and I'm a baby, I'm a new believer, right? So I'm still figuring all this stuff out. But I also knew that I started to recognize all of the things that God had blessed me with. God had blessed me with a master's degree in kinesiology. God had blessed me with a career path and great experiences, from opening my own company to managing a health club to being a director of a 5-star resort. But he also started to shape me into saying, Dan, this is not about you. You have to get over yourself. And that was hard at first, but I started to actually hear that and listen to that. And I told you that when I felt that he was going to call me, I was going to obey that. So here I went, after that cross experience, I'd go back to the cross to visit him on a regular basis. So I'd actually go back to that physical location, and I still do today.
Oh, nice. That's nice.
Yeah. It's like my, you know, little spiritual place where I just hang out with God, and it's just a great place. And so now, a couple years later, I went back to the cross, and God said to me, I want you to take everything that I've given you and go use it for groups that you're not using it for. So here I am serving the rich, right? I'm at a 5-star resort. I've got all these people with, you know, like fame and a ton of money and plastic surgery. And, you know, like, it's like, it is where you want to be in the fitness industry. But I felt God calling me to actually go take everything that he had given me and take it to the poor, the underserved, you know, the folks that don't have access to health club memberships because they can't afford it. So I'm like, well, how am I going to do that? And he started to guide me and direct me. So here I am. I find myself a couple weeks later, from that cross moment again, and that conversation I had with God, across the table from the president of that 5-star resort. And I basically was just honest with him. I'm like, listen, I've worked for you a couple years. I love my job. but I feel like I'm being called to do something different. You know, what if we start a nonprofit organization? We take some of the resources that this company has and we reinvest it into a neighborhood that's less fortunate than the folks that we are serving. So the president of the company could have also said, Dan, good luck. There's the door. Basically what I was doing in that meeting was resigning because I knew that this meeting can go one of two ways. It can either, he can either say yes, or he can say no. And if he says no, I already know the direction I'm going. I'm going to go do what God asked me to do. And I can't say no to that. But I have to actually leverage the resources that God gave me. And one of the resources God gave me was this great job working for this amazing organization that had lots of money. So I might as well take a risk. So here I am taking a risk and God completely blessed me. That same organization funded my nonprofit at a rate of $250,000 a year for the first 3 years of the organization. I ran a nonprofit for 10 years serving the underserved communities, from gang intervention programs to older adults that were poor that can never afford a health club membership, to low-income minority moms that were pregnant with no dads around, right? So we ran programs for prenatal and pregnancy programs. We ran programs for older adults in the poor part of town. We ran programs for gang intervention programs for at-risk youth. And this was all funded by the parent company that I used to work for. And they blessed me by funding my organization. Nice. Which allowed me to go raise more money because the parent organization that first funded me had such a great reputation in the fitness industry. I was able to leverage that relationship to go raise more money from a whole bunch of other organizations because of the relationship that God placed me in. It was boldness for God, but it was my faith was blind, which is okay. Right, because I didn't know what the next day was going to look like. I had no idea. Even though I was funded for the first 3 years, I told you that it was a 10-year organization. Those that the next 7 years were brutal. You know, I was scrapping for money, and I can tell you, we can talk for days, like, honestly, Brad. But there are so many moments of faith during those 10 years. In fact, I just tell you one quick story. One time, we were about 7 years into the organization. And we were out of money, completely out of money. And I just met with the board of directors and I said, we're out of money. We can no longer continue. We have to shut our doors. And I'm sitting around with two staff members. We had four staff at the time. I was sitting with the two staff members and myself just after the board meeting. And I said to them, guess what? You two no longer have jobs. We're shutting down the job. I just had the board meeting. We decided to shut down the organization. As I'm saying that out my mouth, the mailman walked into our nonprofit office and dropped off the mail. I opened up the mail and it was a $50,000 check that catapulted us for another 3 years. When you say boldness versus blindness, man, sometimes it was just like, it was all God. And it was just like by just survival is are we going to be around tomorrow?
Yeah.
And that was a tough lesson to learn, but it's a lesson that I've actually, that I'm applying to my life this very moment. If the faith quotient continues to increase when you have those moments like that, when you think, you know what, there's nothing else I can do under my own strength, but then God shows up. And I call it 11:59:59. It's the last second of the last day, you know, the last moment of the last hour of the last day. And you're like, really? There's nothing else in my own power or my own strength that I can do on my own. But then all of a sudden, in the last moment, the mailman walks through the door, and that's God. Yeah, and says, I've got you. So you have to pay attention to that, because sometimes God will also slam the door shut. So you have to pay attention to the doors that God swings open and the doors that God swings shut. the doors that he swings open, you walk through. The doors that you God slams shut, you do not walk through, because that will be a painful experience. And I've learned that the hard way. And in my boldness, sometimes I try to power through a door, but it wasn't God's intention for my life. And I got beat up for it because I tried to do it under my, I tried to do it under my own strength. Not that God was beating me up, because I thought I had the power in my, and you know, I thought I was strong enough to do it on my own. And yeah. God's like, no, wrong door, Dan.
Yeah. That gets back to what you were saying at the very beginning, that man, there's a really art to listening to God.
Yeah, there is. And again, it's a lifelong journey, but your ear gets finely tuned. You get better able to hear God's voice the longer you walk with him, right? So again, I'm 20 years in, and I can tell you that there's friends of mine that have been 30, 40 years in, and their ears are even more tuned than mine. And I often turn to them. I ask for those mentors in my life, saying, listen, I don't know if I'm hearing clearly. Can I run this idea by you? And they'll say, yeah, Dan, don't do that. Because they've got 10 more years than me. And they're like, yeah, been there, done that. You're going through the wrong door. And that's God, right? Because God is talking through them to me. So, but that is also experience telling me that I have to also tap into those brothers and sisters that have been walking longer with the Lord than I have, to tap into their wisdom and their discernment. It's not just me and God having a conversation at a cross, right? It's me and God having a conversation multiple ways with my family, with my friends, with my, you know, with other believers, paying attention. And also sometimes people that don't know God, sometimes God is speaking through them to me.
Yeah.
So you get better at that over time.
No, I think right? That's really good. You've no doubt heard pastors preach sermons, and certainly the motivational people talk a lot about, don't let anybody that isn't feeding into you take any of your time. But in fact, it's some of those people that you think are taking away from you, yeah, that are distracting, that God is miraculously using to speak to you, yeah, in quite the antithetical way that you wouldn't even imagine. Tell us just a little bit about how you feel your faith and your fitness skills, your vocation, your knowledge, all of that marry together.
Faith and fitness are directly linked. You know, we talk about like these eight dimensions of wellness, you know, and there's a spiritual piece, there's a physical piece, there's a vocational piece, there's a mental piece, there's an emotional piece, right? We have these dimensions and they all work together. So if one of those spokes in my wheel is bent or broken, I'm not a whole person. Find personal trainers in those areas. You know, if you might need a personal trainer in spirituality, right? So, you know, go find a pastor and ask him or her to pour into you and to help you discover those places that need repair and help. Personally, speaking as an entrepreneur, let me put on my entrepreneur hat. I think it's a fantastic business model to be well equipped in those eight dimensions and then sell yourself as someone that can either walk people through. And again, you don't have to be a subject matter expert in all eight dimensions, but you should be well versed enough to be able to walk with somebody in those eight dimensions and then point them to the necessary resources if they are falling short. As a business model, and actually as a health club model, the health club should be saying, hey, listen, we can help point you to, we can get you healthy across dimensions. And that is going to be the gem of the future. It really will be. Mark my words, right? Because if there are health clubs that are saying, guess what? I'm, you know, you come to, let's say there's a general consultant or counselor, you know, a personal trainer that can point people to the necessary resources. In fact, I can see a health club in the future actually having resources within one roof.
I'm speaking today with Pastor Daniel McClure from Northern California. He's talking about superhuman strength. We're gonna get into some details here now about what's happening in his life currently. And I just wanna begin this section of our conversation by asking you, Pastor McClure, as you transitioned from fitness vocation into pastoral vocation, what was the family's response, the wife, the children? Are they like, oh, wait a minute, we're comfortable with what you're doing? Or were they like, cool? Or
yeah,
how did that happen in the family?
You know, I'm blessed with a wife that has great faith in her husband. Sorry. I mean, the first year of our marriage was the first year of a nonprofit organization that I started from scratch, right? So I knew that I found the right bride, and God blessed me with her. So here I am running a nonprofit that's running out of money by year 10. And at the same time, God is calling me to ministry. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I wonder how my wife's going to handle this one, because I'm going from, you know, a struggling nonprofit to going into ministry where I don't have any, you know, I don't have a master's of divinity. I've never gone to seminary, but God is now calling me to be a pastor. And it was just as clear as that cross moment. I was minding my own business, taking a shower. And I heard again, probably for the third time in my life, the audible voice of God saying, Dan, you're going to be a pastor. And I'm like, no, I'm not. So I was the first to say no. But then God just kept, you know, reminding me that of the ways in which he had been equipping me all those years for ministry. So here I am now sharing with Annette the fact that I'm going to, you know, in my 40s, change my career from fitness to ministry. And she just agreed. She said, okay. And I knew she was going to, even though I knew it was going to be, you know, a potential, you know, could have a financial impact on our family. And gosh, how old was I? Age 45. And the pastor came up to me and said, hey, Dan, the elders and I were talking, and we all see a calling on your life to be a pastor. And this is right after God had told me that. So now the church is also, so God is also speaking to my church. And so then I did a 2-year internship as a pastor, where I was basically equipped by a pastor who had been trained through seminary and had his doctorate, and he, you know, helped equip me and a few other brothers to become pastors.
What I think people don't really realize that superhuman strength looks like. If you're like me, as you were transitioning from a successful career in fitness to, man, I don't know what the heck I'm doing as a pastor type of thing, the world, you know, our whole world around us, it's built with be responsible, take the safe route, do what is logically, intelligently proven right. And you've got to be feeling, you know, let's talk about the strength God starts to build in you when I'm assuming, you know, again, if you're like me, you're fighting, you're arguing daily, you know, like, God, I don't think this is right. I think I need to do something different.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because it really is a daily argument with God. And it still is even today, this morning. I mean, it's just it's a constant conversation. You know, the Bible says pray without ceasing. you know, my translation of that is have a conversation with God without ceasing, you know, and that has helped me along the way in my walk with the Lord. When there's times in my life, like, well, how am I going to go from fitness to being a pastor without any traditional training, with when the world says, hold on a second, I need to go to seminary, I need to get my master's of divinity, I need to make sure that I follow those steps to be a pastor, and that's what the world is saying, and I'm not going to do any of that. And the Lord is like, and so now I'm struggling and having this daily conversation with God and with folks around me and my spiritual advisors, if you will, my own pastor and other people that are speaking in my life. And I'm asking them these questions too. So they're also, you know, God surrounds you with people that speak truth and love into your life. And my pastor even said to me, he's like, Dan, I actually don't want you to go to seminary. And he backed it up based on my experience. He saw the ways in which God had been working on me for the last 15 years, and he saw my walk with the Lord. So here I feel the confidence of God speaking through someone else into my life, saying, okay, I have been trained. I have been equipped. I actually know how to run a church, even though I've never run a church before, because I've run a health club, because I've run a nonprofit organization, because I started my own company. You know, I've done these things that equip me to actually lead a church. A lot of times people come out of seminary, they've never led a church before, but they've got the book knowledge, but they don't have the experience. I just did it backwards. I did the experience, and all along that time, those 15 years, I was reading the book. And being given opportunity to teach out of that book, leading small groups, you know, doing stuff in ministry, but not just, you know, I wasn't a vocational minister, but I was doing ministry work along the way. And by the way, running a nonprofit is running a ministry. So here I am now, a pastor, a commissioned pastor after doing 2-year internship, and my pastor blessed me with that. You know, as soon as I was commissioned as a pastor, God gave me an opportunity to actually lead my own church, not plant a church, but to be a lead pastor at a 125-year-old church. So that's what he's done. And that's what he did for me for 5.5 years. I just recently resigned from that position on purpose. And we can talk about that, but God gave me that blessed experience leading a church.
Yeah, I want to get into talking about your August 2021 book. Right before I do that, because you just shared how you were a professional in the fitness world, and then you became a pastor of a 120-year-old church. Let's dial that into the person that is neither a fitness professional or a pastor, and yet feels like God probably wants to use them. We know indeed God does want to use them in that bridge between their fitness activities and their spiritual life. What would you encourage the everyday person to consider?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I know a lot of people in the fitness industry that actually go into ministry, and I know people in the ministry industry that go into fitness. So I think pastors can become personal trainers and like run health clubs. And I think, you know, fitness professionals can become, you know, church leaders. And I think they both can happen simultaneously. I think they can be, you know, I think you can make that your own vocation. I think the most important thing is that you're listening to God's prompting. And if God is calling, in fact, I just had a conversation with a dear friend of mine who is still currently working for that 5-star resort. I just had a conversation with her this weekend, and she feels like God is calling her to do something bigger than what she's been doing. And I just raised my hand and I'm like, you know what? I've been there, done that. If you're feeling the prompting, you have to obey what God is calling you to do. If God is calling you into a hybrid ministry, fitness industry, then do that. And you will be blessed by the opportunity.
Dan's message of you have to obey what God is calling you to do isn't just timely for all of us. It's the urgent invitation you don't want to pass up. Why? Well, in Dan's book, Hidden Treasures, he shares the incredible places where God wants to take you. They are places that can only be found through a lifestyle of obedience, passion, and sacrifice. They're just some of the ingredients that build superhuman strength within you. Join me now as Pastor McClure brings us face to face with an aspect of superhuman strength that shakes even the most bold person. Only with God can we find the strength to not waver.
Tell me about your book. Your book was released in August 2021. What's it about?
It is about my journey with terminal cancer. And so in March of 2017, I was diagnosed with stage 4 terminal cancer, given 3 to 6 months to live. And of course, I fired that person, that that doctor that said those words to me, because I don't think it's up to doctors to verbally project someone's end of life. I think that's actually the wrong approach. I don't care how trained you are as an oncologist. Doctors should never put a date on someone's lifespan. Not up to them. I knew that there were some paths that I can take. I could take the traditional Western medicine model and do everything my doctors tell me to do. I also, because I'm trained in health and wellness and fitness, and I thought to myself, and my wife and I had this conversation, saying, well, what if we just overdosed on foods that God has given us, these plant-based foods that grow from the ground? In Genesis 1:29, God says, I gave you every food with seed in it, that will, those will be yours for food. So I'm saying, well, God's asking us to eat fruits and vegetables. Maybe we should do that. So I'm diagnosed with terminal cancer. I go on kind of another kind of fitness kick where I just, you know, start increasing my physical activity. I start eating as healthy as I ever can. And I start noticing, like, immediately my health started to improve, even though I've been diagnosed. So I read about that in the book. And there's gobs of secular research that backs up everything that I'm saying. And I talk about that too, by the way. And because we're in the fitness industry, we know that as we increase our produce consumption, as we increase our physical activity levels, it increases our chances of survival long-term, longevity. It reduces all types of chronic disease, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, stroke, you know, the big killers. So I knew all that. I've been trained all that. And now I'm just, you know, walking the talk. But also in that journey and in my 4.5 years since diagnosis, it hasn't proven to have worked completely, right? So my metastatic cancer, even though my health got better, my metastatic cancer was continuing to spread. They never found the primary source of that cancer, meaning that I don't know, I still don't know today if I have breast cancer, if I have prostate cancer, if I have, you know, leukemia. They've never found the primary source. It's called non-primary terminal stage 4 cancer, which is just crazy. It's super rare. It's like 10% of the population with cancer don't have a primary source, but my type of cancer is even rarer than that. It's like less than 1%. So I've got this really rare cancer, and I've been kind of dealing with that for the last, you know, almost 5 years now. But I thought, you know what, if I'm going out, you know, if this is it for me, I want to write about it. I want to tell people the truth about this journey, both the good and the bad, the highs and the lows. I want to be honest with people, tell them about my experiences, the impact that it has on me mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, the impact that it has on my wife, on our marriage. You know, I want people to know the truth about this really sucky disease that is really, you know, taking one out of, it kills one out of five in the United States. One out of two people will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. So I want to talk about that and write about it. And God has given me the energy to do that. I'm at a place now in my disease where I've really had to back out. I told you, I mentioned that I resigned from my job that I loved as a pastor, but I felt like physically I had to. I'm on hospice care right now. It's really interesting. People think, you know, when you're on hospice that, you know, hey, guess what? This is it for you. You're on hospice. Adios, amigos. You're done. But I went on hospice care to actually control my pain and my nausea. And it's actually given my function back, where I'm actually back out walking my dogs, and I've got my joy has returned. My pain is managed. Like, most people think of hospice as end of life. I think of it as a place where I can actually gain control of my quality of life again. Unfortunately, I finished my book before I went on hospice care, because I would add another chapter just about the benefit of hospice, because most people have a misconception of what that is. So anyways, I write about these things, and I talk, and the title of the book is called Hidden Treasures, A Pastor's Journey Navigating Stage 4 Cancer. And I talk about 10 treasures that I have discovered over my 4.5 year journey. And I talk about, you know, my love of my wife, this new treasure, and our relationship has changed. It's so different than it was before cancer. You know, I've had to mourn the loss of just be blunt with you, of sexual intercourse. Like, our relationship is no longer that's missing in our relationship. And that's sad to me. I've had to mourn that loss, but I physically just can't do that anymore. I could literally break a bone, right? Because my bones are so fragile right now. But I've had to mourn the loss of that. And yet, what else can I discover? Even though that part of my relationship has gone with my wife, are there new things that we are discovering about who we are, our intimacy together, the highs and lows of that, the things that we've had to cry over together? And there's also been arguments and fights and all these things. See, my heart breaks for the caregivers watching this right now, because cancer isn't just for the person that's been diagnosed. It's also the cancer impacts the family so dramatically. My own children are two kids of faith, which I'm so grateful for, because in their young age, they know the Lord. And I give glory for that, because I know where I'm heading and my kids know where I'm heading. And quite honestly, they're kind of excited about it. We've had open dialogue about where I'm going. You know, this life right here that I'm experiencing, whether it's 51 years or 71 years, I don't know when my last day will be. I'm thankful for every single day. I woke up this morning. I'm glad to be here. But I don't know when my last day will be. I'm thankful for that. And my kids have learned that in my journey, to be grateful for the moment, to be grateful that you're given today. None of us know when our last day will be, right? So shouldn't I wake up every single day and say, thank you, Lord, for this great day? Even if it's going to be filled with pain and nausea and whatever, can't I still be grateful in the midst of the challenges that we face every single day? Can I find thankfulness for the moment? This conversation with you, it's a blessing. Because I hope that one person watches this today and their life is transformed. If it happens with 50,000 people, that's cool. But God is after the one, the lost sheep. He's after you. If you're watching this, God wants a personal relationship with you today, because he wants you to experience the blessings that I have experienced. I have terminal cancer. I could die today, but I am grateful for the moment to go after those things that God says go after, and to reject those things that God says reject. The more we discover these things in our life, the more we will discover how blessed we are, even in the midst of our daily challenges.
Yeah, Daniel, this is so counterintuitive to what people would typically think is superhuman strength. You know, we think of superhuman strength as the building up, the even stronger, the beyond normal, the Olympic level strength. Yeah. And you're talking about something that's totally the opposite.
Yeah, in fact, it's funny, when I saw your title of Superhuman Strength, I'm like, man, that is so not me these days. Because I don't feel like I have superhuman strength. It's God who strengthens me. It's not anything I can do under my own strength. It's only the grace and the mercy of God that gives me that strength. So, and that's something that we learn as we walk with God, you know, in our journey, is that it's not anything that we can do. It's what he provides for us. And that's sometimes a hard lesson to learn, because, you know, we think that, you know, we can just power through our life challenges. And what we end up doing is white knuckling so tightly to survive that we get fatigued, and then we let go. And then we end up struggling with so many other things like pornography or alcohol or drugs or broken relationships and all these things that, you know, take us out. And yet when we can let go of those things that we want to so hard under our own strength grip onto, and we can say, God, you know what, I don't have the strength to deal with these challenges myself, I need to hand them over to you, cancer then doesn't become that big of a burden, because it's Christ who strengthens me. It's Christ who will remind me how blessed I've been for 51 years. It's Christ will remind me of the things that like I just shake my head at, you know, my amazing marriage and the two children that he has given me, the fact that I'm sitting on this swing chair today in my backyard, and I sit in a place of peace that God provided for me. Not that I was able to find on my own, but it's God that provides your peace, a peace that surpasses understanding. I mean, my recent prayer is, God, give me 10 more years. That's been my prayer. I pray for a miracle. I still believe that God is the God of miracles. God is the same miracle worker that he was when Jesus walked the earth and performed all these miracles. He's still that same miracle worker today. And I've seen people miraculously healed from cancer. Will that happen to me? That's up to God. I hope it does. If it doesn't, that's okay too, because I know where I'm going. Our life here is temporary, but our life is eternal. When we say yes to him, this is just a temporary blink. It's a moment in time. And we use this moment the best we can. We try to equip ourselves for what is next. And that's what I've been trying to do since I said yes to Jesus at that cross in 2001 Christmas morning, is I'm going to say, you know what, God, equip me for what's next.
How have you learned to listen and give in to God's will?
Here's how I've learned to do it, is that you have to take risks and you have to be okay with making mistakes. Because sometimes I say, okay, I think I hear you, Lord. This is the direction I'm going to go. And then it's turned out to be a complete train wreck. But I learned from that, because I'm like, hold on a second. I wasn't clearly hearing, but faith is spelled R-I-S-K. I think superhuman strength is defined as your growing faith. And as my faith has increased, I think that has overflowed in other people that I have had influence over, like my wife and my children and my church community, my neighbors, my circle of friends. It is my hope that as they look at my life and they say, hey, even though Dan has a terminal disease, it seems like his faith has not wavered. And where does he find that strength? Well, he finds that strength in God. My strength does not come from me, it comes from God. And I hope that my cup then overflows with my faith, and people then see that in me. And then it is my hope that their faith increases. God wants you to tap into his path for your life, as opposed to your own path that you think that you can accomplish under your own strength.